I'm Anna.
And I'm Kent.
And this is Film and Family, a podcast about feature filmmaking for professionals in the film industry with families. Hit subscribe to never miss an episode.
Let's jump right in.
All right, Kristen, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. I'm so excited to have you on. Unfortunately, Kent is not here tonight, so just you and me, but that's probably good because we always talk too much when there's too many people anyway. So.
I can't wait to meet him, though.
Yeah, someday. I know. It'll still happen when you come out to Georgia, maybe.
Yes, hopefully.
Yes. Okay, so Kristen is an actress. I think first and foremost an actress, right?
I would say so. Yeah, that's what I've been doing the longest.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And a beautiful actress and really good at it too. And she recently moved into directing. I met you at a film festival and you had directed your short, Lumeria. Yeah. And I just remember seeing you on the stage and you were so full of energy and you answered all the questions beautifully. And I was like, I want to be like her. She's so cool.
And I thought the same thing about you. I remember going up to the stage, you had already talked, and I just had to grab your shirt and say, let's talk after. I didn't want you to leave. And then red carpet stuff after you luckily came back and talked to me, because you can get swept up in all the pictures and everything. But I was so glad because that's where we connected.
Yeah, I do remember that. I thought that was after you spoke, but maybe it was before.
It was right before. I was on my way up to the stage and I grabbed Rachel and I said, let's talk after.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I could tell that we were going to be friends at that moment. So what inspired you to move into directing? Because that was one that you directed. And I know that now you're writing a feature version of it. So what kind of inspired that move?
I think there's a couple things. So as a creative, just having control over your own stories, I think eventually falls into a lot of actors' minds. They want to tell their own stories. Even though I didn't act in this one, it's a story that when I was younger, I did picture myself as the main character, but I just grew out of that role. But I still wanted to tell the story so bad. It was all about telling that story. And so I started with a short because it was manageable to me and it was a proof of concept for the feature, which I hope to create.
Yeah, it was an excellent short. Was that your directing debut?
It was, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's like, what do you really classify as that, though? I mean, it's like, do you call directing something on your phone your directorial debut?
Right.
It was the most production value. It was my debut. It was my most professional thing, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, that's awesome. And what was that experience like? Was it how you expected?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yes and no. No, in the sense that you kind of pick things up as you go. You're like, oh, I didn't expect this to look exactly this way, but I don't know if you ever do. You just kind of expect to go with it. So yes and no. I mean, it told the story I wanted to tell, but maybe I didn't even fully realize what I wanted until I saw it. And once I saw it, then I'm like, that's it.
Hmm. Yeah, that is hard to do. Because there's always the vision you have before you get on set.
Yeah.
And then what you actually have, you know, in front of you. Kind of reconciling those two can be difficult.
Yeah. It was a mini film school. I'm a hands-on learner and going through the writing stage and then production and post-production. I heard a quote and I'm going to mess it up, but it's something like a good director basically can spot a good idea when it's there. It doesn't necessarily mean it came out of your head, but you know it when you hear it or when you see it. And sometimes it's your own, but it's being open to that collaboration. And we had some happy accidents in post-production that, again, it's not how I wrote it, but I was like, that's better.
That's awesome. No, I love that. I think we give directors sometimes too much credit for all the ideas But at the same time, it takes that perception to know which ones are good and which ones to use.
Yeah, it's a leadership position is what it is. It doesn't mean all the ideas came out of your head.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so now you've been writing the feature film. How is that going?
Off and on.
Okay.
Well, I've joined writing groups and I've done so many different approaches, and I have so many ideas that I'm toying around with novelizing it first before I turn it into a feature film. So actually today I was at Barnes and Noble and I picked up Hero's Journey. I'm sure you've read it. I haven't. And I'm still figuring out how I want to tell the story. I don't know how long it will take, but it's definitely always there. It's not abandoned.
That's good. Yeah. Just keep playing with it. Okay. So for those of you who are listening who don't know, I guess I didn't quite finish my introduction of you, Kristen. So after we met, we ended up doing some coaching together. Mm-hmm. And I think that was why you pulled me aside, was because I mentioned that I did coaching. And then
I was like, a female filmmaker, that's always hard to say, who is also a coach. Are you kidding me? Yes. That's why I pulled you aside.
Yeah, that was awesome. So we did that together. And then you eventually went and got certified as a coach as well. And you're the only other person I know in the film industry who has gone through that same certification that I have. So I would love to talk about your journey, you know, where you were before you found coaching, you know, what your biggest takeaways were, why you loved it, and kind of how you've ended up where you are now. So let's start with beforehand. Like, what were some of your challenges before you found coaching that maybe coaching was able to help you with?
Okay, I'm a huge mental health advocate, and coaching has been one of the main tools that have helped me manage my own mental health. And it was through listening to a podcast that I discovered coaching. And I think I had already signed up to go to the life coach school when you talked, and you were like just finishing. So it's like we were kind of back to back. But yes, I just feel like the tools in coaching helped me manage my brain so much better. It changed my life.
And how did you think it compared to like therapy and other things that you had tried before? Because I know that's something where people sometimes have a hard time knowing, like, which one should I do? What would help the most?
Mm-hmm. This is so loaded because I'm so passionate about it. I have so many things to say about it. I feel personally like the CTFAR model, which is used in the type of coaching that we do, is very similar to CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy. You can't call it that. And it's not exactly the same, but a lot of the concepts are the same. And it's really when you understand that your thoughts are at the root of everything. Your emotions are caused by your thoughts, not by your circumstances. And when you can start to manage your brain that way, the results in your life change astronomically. And so how it compares, I just feel like I've met with great therapists, but coaching just felt more applicable. I knew how to actually change my thinking through coaching.
Oh, that's interesting. So like it was more hands-on, like you can do it yourself.
Yes. Sort of. Yeah. Hmm. Just made more sense. I think it's kind of the same thing, but the way it's taught made more sense to me.
So do you still believe in like working with a private coach, or now that you know these tools so well, do you just use them yourself and coach yourself?
Oh, I think that even if you're a master at using the model, having an outside perspective is always helpful. And right now I'm certified, but I'm in the second half of training where there's a whole bunch of coaches who just coach each other all the time. And it's really valuable. And before I went through, you allowed me to go through your program, and I loved your approach. And they have a concept called holding space. It's just a very non-judgmental, get your thoughts out and let's explore your thoughts. And I feel like you were really good at that.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so, can you tell everyone what you do as a coach now, like what your niche is? Because isn't it related to mental health?
It absolutely is, yes. So I'm trying to think of, instead of just out and saying it, like how I got to the journey, but basically, I have had a real struggle with my mental health and checked myself into a hospital in 2016 and was diagnosed with bipolar 2 disorder after thinking that I just had clinical depression for years and years and years. So I was incorrectly medicated for years and years and years. And when I got out of the hospital, I kind of dedicated the rest of my life to being a voice and an advocate because there's so much shame and stigma around bipolar disorder. And so I decided that these coaching tools had helped me so much. I knew there were other people in my same boat with a diagnosis or a loved one with a diagnosis that coaching could help them. So my niche is helping others with bipolar disorder.
That is awesome. And if someone wants to work with you, how would they find you? I know we will probably do this at the end in the show notes too, but just while we're on it.
My website is kristenjensencoaching.com.
Cool. I'll have to check that out. I haven't checked out your website yet.
It's kind of set up like a blog. I might change that later on, but I mean, it's got my socials on there and a blog and some other stuff. It actually has some artsy fartsy stuff too. I'm like, why not just throw it all on there?
Fun, why not? That's awesome. So you were incorrectly diagnosed, and then you got to the point where you checked yourself into a hospital. What did that look like? What did, not knowing what was going on?
Well, I just didn't understand why I had been to therapy and I was taking medicine. So why was I suicidal? And it was so dark that I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to end my life, but I didn't know how to suffer that kind of pain anymore. So is your question, what is a hospital like, or what is, because we have stories.
No, I guess I just meant like right before what you just explained, like when you don't know what's going on, what
Yeah,
does it feel
having
like?
a correct diagnosis makes all the difference. I actually started my own podcast called Mind Matters on Bipolar with KJ, so long, but you can find it if you type all that in. And I talk tons about how correct medication with bipolar is key factor because a lot of people go on wrong medication and have a really bad experience, and therefore they think medicine is evil. But when you find the right one, your stability is so much better. After you're at a baseline of stability, then you can implement those coaching tools. But if you can't even get to baseline, you can coach all you want, but you're not well. You're too sick to even really apply them.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I know there's a lot of medicines, and trying them can be kind of a tumultuous experience, is what I've heard.
It is. And it's, I think, having just a support system going through those years takes years often is really important and made all the difference for me.
Yeah, I actually have a friend that just came to mind. I'll have to recommend her to you because I can't imagine what that must feel like.
Not
Hormones are never fun. I feel like even the small amount I've experienced with postpartum depression or just, breastfeeding and like my hormones kind of fluctuating, and it's a crazy feeling. It feels out of control. Like my emotions are not actually created by my thoughts. My body's a little bit overreactive or.
And it's hard for people who don't even have those big hormonal fluctuations to understand. Luckily, my husband is supportive because he really doesn't understand it, but he sees it. But yes, if you experience womanly hormones, then you can at least somewhat understand what a bipolar swing is like.
Interesting. And how would you say your husband is supportive, or how could someone be supportive of a friend or a loved one who is experiencing this?
There's so many ways. When I start talking about it a lot, I do get a little bit like, is this emotions or is this? I don't know. because we've been married 16 years and it's not easy to go through that. And also, ever since getting on lithium, that's been like the magic for me is lithium. I haven't been in those dark, dark places, but when I've been in those dark, dark places, he reminds me that it's okay not to be okay. So just being there is huge. I don't know. I don't want to get into all the like suicide awareness stuff, because I don't even know if I know what all of those things are. But there were times that like my mom would come over when Ryan couldn't be here. Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing she was parked in my driveway, because I, at those times, might have taken off. I mean, that's how bad it got. Those were in the bad times. And since I've been on lithium, I have not been that low. I mean, in answer to your question, I mean, my mom would come. My husband was there. And learning together what some of the symptoms and signs are, because it can be really hard on relationships, you know? Relationships, it's something that we all have to learn how to manage. And then you throw in some bipolar. Just an extra thing. But I mean, it's cliche to say that it makes you stronger, but it does. You know, once you know how to manage something, you feel pretty awesome when you are managing it. You're like, I'm doing pretty good, you know?
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. It's like if you can do something really hard like that,
you feel proud of yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. And I bet for you as a coach, if you can manage your mind through that kind of thing, it's like,
oh, I wouldn't feel like I could coach other people unless I felt like I had been through this journey of learning how to manage my own illness and then not beating myself up when I do get sick. And that's part of it. It's as humans, not beating yourself up when you're not perfect.
Yeah. Easy to say and hard to learn how to do. Yeah. So on that note, what are some of the takeaways that you do remember from the coaching we did together? I know it's been a while.
But I remember you did a whole survey at first of the different aspects of your life and rate them how you're doing. And then we picked a few together. And yeah, we honed in on a couple of them.
Why do you remember that?
Because I'm creating my own program right now. I've just been doing some one-on-one coaching, which is just like session by session. And I feel like a program where you can kind of focus on different areas of your life. What is that even called? Is there a fancy name?
It's called the home tour now, but I don't know. Home tour, because we kind of talk about how you live inside your mind all the time. And our production company is Invisible Mansion Productions. So it's kind of like that invisible home that you live inside of and the things that you can't see, but they're there. So that's kind of where it is right now.
Yeah. Well, I remember it's like, how's your financial life? How are your relationships? How is your creativity? All these things. And so, yeah, I just think that there's so many different facets of your life that it's nice to have a program to kind of focus on one thing at a time.
Yeah. And what's cool is when you focus on one thing, it always has a ripple effect on all the other areas.
Yeah.
Like it's that
thought patterns.
Yeah. And it's that whole idea of like, if there's a tree, you can start with any branch to get to the root. It doesn't matter where you start. You'll get there.
Yeah.
Cool. Anything else that you remember? I know we were talking a bit about your screenplay that you were writing at the time. I'm trying to remember.
I feel like, were we coaching together before I was even on lithium? I was like in a pretty stable place, but I was still, I don't think I'd found lithium yet. Because with bipolar, you have, it's not like this clear cut thing, but you're not always wild, whatever. It's just like, if you're in a hypomanic or a manic stage, then you can be in a euthymic stage. And I think I was doing pretty well, but I think maybe we were working on my relationship with my mom. That's what I remember working on with you.
Yeah, I remember that a little bit.
Yeah.
Interesting. So how was your life different after you found coaching? I know that there's also the medicine that makes a big difference, but, and especially after you went to coach training and became a coach yourself, so you really learned this stuff in depth, what differences have you noticed?
It's kind of like what we were talking about before. I do feel like with my particular illness, I have to be at a base level to apply the tools because I would hear them. And sometimes I felt like, oh, like intellectually, it made a lot of sense, but I couldn't necessarily apply it until I got at a good baseline. And once I was able to actually apply, my life just basically it's going into emotional adulthood instead of emotional childhood. You just get a lot more mature with owning up to life and not blaming people. That's the main difference. You don't blame anyone for anything but yourself. And then even then you're gentle with yourself. You're like, oh, I'm a human. Duh, I would think that thing, but is that useful? You really examine your thoughts. Like, is that a useful thought? And if it's not, then you're able to explore different ones that are.
Yeah, I love that criteria because it's no longer like, is it true? You know, true or false is not the question because you could say, yeah, it's true, but it's not useful to keep thinking it over and over and over again.
Yeah, if it's just causing you suffering, what's the point?
Yeah. And you can always look at it a different way or just kind of change slight little words can make a huge difference.
Yeah, some people think it's automatically changing a negative thought to a positive thought. And you can do that if it feels good and if it feels right. But if it feels false, you don't do that. You kind of ladder it. Like it's possible. And you wiggle. It's always about wiggling those unuseful thoughts.
Yeah, those ones that are really stuck in there that feel like that's just a universal truth. You kind of have to shake them up and poke some holes in them and be like, well, maybe I'm wrong.
Yes.
Yeah, that is really useful. And it's true. Like, I think most people jump to the other extreme. Like, wait, you don't want me to believe this, so you want me to believe the opposite? You can believe whatever helps you. And that's what's so nice is that it's so personalized too, because everyone's different. The same thought might work for one person and might create the opposite emotion for someone else and be really stressful.
Yeah.
It's not like affirmations. I'm just going to say these same affirmations and I'll get the same results. It's like, no, I have to find something that works for me.
It's very conscious work. So as I was doing it, I actually realized that there's a place for everything because trauma deals with more unconscious things. And sometimes there's different modalities, like hypnosis even, that have helped me work with subconscious things to get to the more consciousness of the CTFAR model or coaching.
What do you mean by that? Could you give an example?
RTT or consciousness, or what do you mean?
Yeah, you said there's sort of subconscious things, getting them more to consciousness, and then you use the model.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe it's just a school of thought. So I don't claim to know the gospel truth on it. But I remember in my training at the coach school, some people had dealt with some pretty severe trauma. And there are certain instances where a coach should not be dealing with that. You should go to a licensed therapist or whatnot. And subconscious is something that you're not even really aware of. Now, coaching can sometimes bring that to your awareness, but sometimes it can't. It's so stuck in there because it's subconscious. And I think there are other modalities like hypnosis, other ones that can deal with things that you're not consciously wanting to deal with. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not really super familiar with that. I do feel like coaching has brought up a lot of unconscious thoughts for me. But that's usually when I'm working with someone else and they just catch something I say and they're like, wait a second.
They're like, oh, I didn't even know I was thinking that. But when it comes to trauma, I think specifically,
Yeah.
deep trauma, I don't think that, especially with my niche, working with people who have bipolar, I never treat or diagnose. That is not in my scope of what I do. I just show people their brain. They are to do with it what they want. And usually it's very illuminating.
Yeah. No, I love that about coaching. It's always your choice, what you want to do. Your coach is never going to tell you what to do. And there is a place for seeing a doctor or seeing a therapist or seeing someone else in conjunction or before getting into coaching. So, love that. How do you feel like it's influenced your career?
Coaching? It just influences everything. Again, it's taking responsibility for things. And it doesn't mean that everything is butterflies and roses all the time either. Like, oh, I've got coaching, now everything's good. It's knowing how to manage your mind around hard things. It's been hard for me because a couple of years ago, I was booking a lot of television and film, and I was at the top of my game. I was very lucky, especially in Utah, to be working so much. And then to go from that to, I did film one feature film this year, and it was a really fun one. But I was really, you have to have a thick skin, and I was really hurt by this one that I didn't get. And coaching is what helps me through those so-called rejections. I mean, I can consciously again say, oh, it's just that part wasn't meant for me, but someone else, and say all the right things. But in here, it's still like, you know, especially over and over and over again, if you're not booking the part, it can take a hit on your self-esteem. And that's where I think constant coaching has really helped me stay in it. There are so many actors who eventually stop doing this because they can't stomach the rejection. There's so much rejection, you know, but I keep, here I am still here. So coach me, Anna.
No, I want to hear from you. What are the thoughts that have helped you with the rejection?
Okay. So, I mean, I started saying it, and I guess it just goes a layer deeper of like, this isn't meant for you and you'll get your shot. But when I really deeply internalized that, it really never was meant for you. Cause this is a belief that helps me and it doesn't resonate with everyone. But when I am in the mindset that things do happen for a reason, I am more at peace when they don't go my way. Even having bipolar disorder, any tragedy or hardship, I'm like, there is something I'm supposed to learn from this. And so I would say something along those lines is what helped me come to peace with that.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. It's interesting because being on the other side as a director and casting people, it's really never meant personally, you know? It's not like I'm watching auditions and saying, oh, no, no one's good enough or whatever. It's just you find that right person, and sometimes they're right just because of ability, but sometimes they're right just because they look the part. You're like, well, we need someone who looks like this child's mother or who looks like the right age. Or, I mean, it's really stuff that's outside of an actor's control a lot of times.
So it can be as petty as like, oh, you look like my ex-girlfriend, I'm not hiring you. You don't know what it is, you know, and it doesn't matter. Like, you might never know. You just have to let it go.
Yeah, I'd like to assume that it's not usually for reasons like that, but it could be in some cases. Yeah.
Again, what is serving you? I don't know.
Yeah. And it could be that they said, wow, that actress did an excellent job, and I'm going to keep their contact information for later. And we've done that before.
Which does happen. Yes. I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years, and you're absolutely right. Even if you don't get the part, you make connections and impressions. And I mean, that's a whole other topic of conversation because it's so true. It's part of the job.
Yeah. Oh no, that's helpful. What else would you say to someone who's still maybe somewhat unfamiliar with these tools? They're just starting to learn them and they're in the film industry and they're facing all the things we face, having to get lots of work done and sit down and work hard and keep writing that script and keep doing those auditions and keep getting rejected. What advice would you give them?
What has helped me the most, and that I've been coached on a ton, because I mean, I have several different coaches. It's interesting to see different coaches using the same tools and their approaches and what questions they ask me. And there was this one girl that she's like, why do you love it? Or like, why do you even do it? And I thought about it, and it was because I love it. Because I feel like a kid coming to life, just using my imagination. And when I'm actually in that zone, there's no better feeling to me. And so it took away all the disappointment when I just got in that place of, that's why I do this. I love this. And if you can keep remembering why you love it, and if you love it enough, you'll keep doing it.
Yeah, I think that's really powerful to remember your why. Because I think a lot of people get stuck thinking, well, this is just what I do, or this is just what I have to do, even about a lot of things. And that's where it's been freeing for me. A lot of coaching has taught me that I don't have to do anything.
Yeah, I love that too. Tell me I have to do something and I'm going to do the opposite.
Yeah, but then you're like, I'm choosing to do everything I'm doing. So if I don't like it, why do I keep doing it? And so you have to find your why or do something else.
Yes, yes. And I don't even know how I want to segue into this, but I feel like it's useful because I think a lot of times we think again that our circumstance is the cause of our pain and it's our thoughts, not our circumstance. But there is a point where it's not bad to change your circumstance, but why are you changing it? And are you doing it just to catch a feeling, or is it just time to change the circumstance? For example, I really want to move out to Georgia too, you know, but that's not just because it's like, oh, the work is dry here in Utah. I want lots of things for my kids to experience. And we're not just jumping out there right now. My husband has some things with work that he wants to finish up in the next year or two. Would I go out there right now if I could? Well, and I could, but without him, you know, well, I'm willing to wait for him. I don't know. I just think that it's important to understand when you're changing your circumstances, get really centered on why you're doing that first.
Yeah, I think that's a good point as well. It's true. Sometimes it's easier just to change the circumstance than to stay in it and keep changing your thoughts about it. Sometimes it's like, yeah, just go fix that thing. Just go change that thing. Yeah, I'm sure you could coach yourself to like it or to be okay with it, or you could just go change it. And sometimes it's outside of your control, or it's something you want to stay in. You just want to enjoy it more. So yeah, knowing your why is always good either way.
Amen, sister.
All right. Well, I love all the things we've talked about. I feel like the time has flown by.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we haven't touched on that you feel like would be beneficial for our audience?
What's your favorite? I'll turn the interview around and ask you, what's your favorite aspect of coaching?
Oh, good. My favorite aspect of coaching, like getting coached or coaching?
Both, if you want to answer. Both. Like, okay. I was thinking, like, when you coach, what is your favorite thing about coaching? But I'd like to hear both.
Yeah, I'll start with when I coach because that comes quicker to mind. I think I just love the love that I feel for the people that I coach, because I think when we understand people, it allows us to love them. And so every time I coach someone, I'm always surprised because on the one hand, humans have a lot of things in common. We're very similar. We all operate on the model in our brains. But at the same time, our models all look so different. And so I love seeing someone's unique model and understanding them in a new way. And I just feel love when I understand people. And then I feel love for like all humanity, because I just feel like this greater understanding towards people and this greater appreciation for the differences we have. Mm-hmm. So I feel a lot of love when I coach, and I think that's probably my favorite part about coaching. Yeah. And then being coached is a little harder. It's harder to be the one getting coached, to be vulnerable, to share everything, to have your weaknesses kind of pointed out.
But I did that a long time ago. I have no shame anymore. I know all my faults. I have nothing to hide.
Right, right. You have to get to that place, especially if you're getting coached in front of a group or something. Just like, here it is, this embarrassing thought that I've been having, but I'm just going to lay it out there for everyone. But then it's so worth it. And I feel like I think probably my favorite part about getting coached is when you find that thought that changes everything. And sometimes it's the thought that I didn't know I was thinking. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, that has been causing me all this pain, all these results I didn't want. It's just that sneaky little thought. And sometimes it's finding the thought that you replace it with, and you're like, okay, that feels really good. I'm going to practice that thought every day and just make it part of who I am.
And that's why having a coach is good too, to remind you, because it's easy to say, oh, I'll just think this new thought, but having someone check in on you, oh, for me anyways, so helpful.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I even have been having my husband check in with me and say, hey, how are you doing? And he's been doing a little bit of coaching. He's like, I'm not very good at it, but I'll try.
My husband, like, yeah, our poor husbands, they have to know this.
Oh yeah. Doing it all the time. Yeah. He lets me coach him, which I think is cool. Helps me feel love for him again. And he likes it a lot. And now he's coaching me too, which is fun. Fun experiment. And yeah.
You always kind of joke with each other, like, that's a thought. That's a thought. That's just a thought.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We get those arguments all the time.
Not true. It's just a thought.
Like, okay, whatever. I don't care. Do you guys argue about that stuff?
Or we do it jokingly. Yeah. And then we'll discuss if it actually hits a nerve, you know?
Yeah.
But we do enjoy talking about it for sure.
Yeah. And you're a mom as well. I didn't even mention that. Do you do this with your kids at all?
Oh, I'm a mom. I thought you said, and my mom was a coach.
Oh, no, no.
Yes, I'm a mom. I have twin girls that are 9. And do I coach them? And a son that is 6. I haven't formally coached them. Mm-mm. I think like concepts are there kind of just innately, but I don't, do you coach your kids?
I don't coach them. They're a little young for that, but I do kind of notice when they say things and I'll point out, nope, he didn't make you mad. She didn't, you know,
yeah.
Someone else can't make you feel something. There's these little things that we say all the time and don't even realize are ingraining ideas from a young age. And so I think I try to catch those. Kent just got home.
Hi, Kent.
Hi. Should I jump in?
You should jump in for the last 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Jump in.
We're almost done. So we were just wrapping up the podcast and we were talking about how we coach each other and jokes we make with our husbands and kids and stuff like that.
Oh. Yeah, getting coached by your spouse is an interesting experience. So I am an amateur, uncertified coach that does my best to sort of... Anyway, I'm mostly getting coach training by Anna when I coach her.
Yeah, that was our last session. I was like, you did all these things.
You're doing it wrong. You're doing it. You got to change the way... Okay, honey, I'm the coach. Stop. Be quiet.
And then he sent me his notes after and inserted his own little comments like... It did not take days. It only took a few minutes.
It's true.
I thought that was kind of funny. Anyway.
Putting truth into my coaching notes. Yeah.
What do you think about coaching? Is it something that, like, how much merit do you think is there?
Oh, it's all woo-woo. Yeah. It's preposterous stuff. I'm just going with the flow. I'm just kidding. No, it's, I mean, I think from the get-go... We both had the initial impression of like, what does that mean? And then as we've gotten deeper, I've listened to a lot of podcasts from Brooke and Jody, and Anna's become certified. And I mean, we talk about this stuff like crazy. There was actually a lot of things that we'd become prepared. She had this experience actually while serving a church service mission when she had a fortune cookie that said, feelings are ideas with roots. And her mission companion just had these hours-long discussions on that because it felt so revelatory. It was from a fortune cookie. And she came home, and we talked about that a lot, this idea that feelings are ideas with roots and what that meant. And then we discovered the model, and it was like, yeah, that's why that rang so true. But the model kind of completes that thought feeling. It completes the whole model. And so
that's yeah, I think a lot of... self-help books kind of get the connection between a few things. They're like, oh, actions create results. Oh, your actions are motivated by your feelings. They'll get little pieces of it. Thoughts create feelings, but they don't connect it all together to this full circle.
Especially to a place model. Where it becomes practical. where like actually you can start to utilize it. Cause I always read them and I feel super pumped, and then it creates this short wave of motivation. You read this book or whatever, and then you've got to figure out a way to be able to take your life and steer it. And that's what the full model, I think, does if you use it. It takes a lot of use, and that's something I'm not always that good at. Even weekly coaching sessions, you forget to look at the notes, coach yourself, do models every day.
That's what we were just talking about, having a coach to hold you accountable. And we were also talking about the difference between the model and like CBT. Same kind of concepts, but again, it's more practical. I think that's the word to use, and I would agree. I think CBT is amazing, but I just like how easy it is to apply it. Not easy, but easy to conceptualize.
Yeah.
Yeah. Easy, but not easy. That's the model for you. Well, cool. Do you have any questions for Kristen? We've talked about...
I'm jumping in here.
Let me brief you. We talked about how she's mostly an actress, but she moved into directing, how we met at the film festival, mental health and wellness, and how she helps people with bipolar, with coaching as well, and how it's affected your career, kind of your before and after becoming a coach.
My question is, and maybe you talked about this, but like, how do you handle helping people with bipolar when we are not certified therapists? What is your opinion on that? Do you say, like, are there any requirements that you give people if it's a serious, you know, if they're struggling? Do you say, no, well, you also have to have this in conjunction with coaching? Or maybe you talked about that already.
A little bit,
but I think it's such a good question, because I was just telling Anna, like, yeah, I do not diagnose. I do not tell people what to do. But what I didn't mention is, and I'm still putting my program together, is that I do, and I don't know if I'm going to have this in writing or something, but I am an advocate for being medicated and working with a psychiatrist if you have bipolar. And so I don't know if I'm going to put it in my personal practice, like, you must be seeing a doctor to work with me. I don't know, because again, I don't tell people what medicines to take or anything like that. But I also think that to protect everyone involved, because I am a believer that medicine is the first line of care for this particular illness, it's really important. But I have had clients, and that hasn't come up yet. But again, I'm still building my program.
I mean, I think you've been seeing a psychiatrist if you're confident that you have bipolar. Unless you self-diagnosed, someone probably gave you that diagnosis and you've probably met with someone at that point. So maybe I'm wrong, but
actually, that's my assumption. I was diagnosed and didn't meet with an outpatient psychiatrist for a year or two later. Oh, people still go to their general practitioner, which I think maybe could be fine. Just I think that a psychiatrist is better to see because it's more specialized.
Well, it's like trying to go to your practitioner to treat like cancer. Doesn't make any sense. They're not specialists in that particular thing, you know?
Yeah, I do think that it's better to see somebody who really understands it well.
Yeah, because it's a complex thing. You'd see a cardiologist if you had a very complex heart problem. You'd see a specialist, and something that's complicated, so...
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, this could go down a whole rabbit hole that we don't have to go down, but my general practitioner did prescribe me a mood stabilizer instead of a antidepressant, and told me that it was for atypical depression. Hmm. But you go look it up and it's for bipolar. I mean, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know all the ins and outs, but when I finally did see the psychiatrist, it's like, yeah, it's bipolar. You know, so
that's confusing. Yeah,
there's a lot of different viewpoints from even doctors. I just did an episode on my own podcast about this doctor of not psychiatry. I don't even remember what she was a doctor in, saying how society's got it all wrong and we need to stop calling it mental illness and it can all be managed with the brain. And I was like, whoa, like that's dangerous, because I'm all about mind management. That's why I'm a coach. But I know for myself and what we talked about earlier, that if I'm not at a baseline with medicine, I can't even apply those coaching tools.
Yeah.
So,
because you can't apply the coaching tools, because the coaching tools are based upon the premise of a healthy working brain. And so you use medication to get yourself to that baseline, like you said, and then the model becomes very efficacious.
Yeah, and that's kind of how I realized I was struggling with hormonal stuff after having my first baby, was that I started crying because I stepped in a puddle, and he was laughing, and I was crying, and I was like, no, this is really a big deal. And
and then she's, but she was just coming to a realization about the model, and she was trying to trace it, like, what is the thoughts that's triggering all these emotions? And I said, I think you're misleading yourself. I said, I don't think that there's like a belief you have about that puddle that is triggering this intense emotional reaction. I think there's maybe something hormonal going on. And it took her like 30 minutes after until she was just kind of like, I think you're right.
But yeah, it once it had so passed, because in the moment you're just like, no, this it feels is legitimate. So real. Yeah.
Yes.
But then once it had passed, I was like, I can't really trace that one back. I don't know what that was coming from.
Yeah. It's like similar to if you were to get high on a drug or get a buzz and then say, why did I feel that way? What was I thinking about that made me feel so inebriated? Like, it was like, no, your inebriation didn't come from your thoughts. It came from a chemical. And in this case, it's coming from maybe some sort of a chemical imbalance or hormonal imbalance. And
that is such a good analogy. I love that you just said that. That is clear thinking right there, my friend.
Oh, thanks.
I'll use that.
It's all my medications that help me think so clear. I'm just kidding.
So one last question that I just thought of. I do feel like there's this stigma that everyone in LA has a shrink, and like the arts and mental illness tend to go hand in hand. Do you think that that's true?
I don't know. All I can speak is from my own experience, and I know that it's my experience. I don't know about everyone else.
Okay. Do you see any reason why that would be the case?
I think artists feel deeply, or allow themselves to feel deeply, and maybe that can get out of control. I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That is interesting.
I've often thought that maybe artists, we don't express ourselves as well. Not always. Some people are very good at expressing themselves through words and through normal traditional modes of conversation. But I think that sometimes we can express our feelings more through a different outlet and connect with that. I don't know if that would relate.
I've never related to that. I've heard so many people say that. Lots of filmmakers especially, they say, I feel like I can communicate myself better through film than I can through verbal communication. And I'll be frank, in my personal experience, film is such a big craft. I don't feel like, oh yeah, I can just express myself through film. I'm like, no, I'm still wrangling this craft. It's bigger than me. I feel like I grew up with articulate parents, and so I learned how to speak well, and I can express myself pretty well, and I was a pretty good writer in school. I mean, I'm not like the greatest writer ever, but I can write clearly. And I actually feel really good talking. It's the film is harder for me. I think there are all kinds of people. I hope there are all kinds of people that make art, or in this case film, just because I like getting that intensely diverse perspectives on things. I mean, I know some people who hardly will speak to me. They're so quiet. I couldn't even talk to them, like film school students. And they would put their work up on screen, and it was remarkable. And I was like so envious of them. And I was like, and then I tried to talk to them about it, and I couldn't get anything out of them because they were, you know, they were kind of
oddballs sometimes.
Not as verbal.
Not all of us. Yeah. I don't know if you can like stereotype.
Yeah. I don't know if I can. Yeah. Because there's like the filmmakers that are like super good in a room, so to speak. They can just pitch anything. Super charismatic, born leaders, and their stuff's good too. It's not like, oh, and then they're a bunch of movie by committee people and executive hogwash. And it's like, no, they're totally, there's nothing invalid about their filmmaking skills.
Well, and the word is part of the art form, you know?
It's huge.
I think especially in film, it combines so many different art forms. So music and visuals and motion and rhythm and words on a page.
Everything. Actors are often very well spoken, should be able to speak well, and directors need to be able to communicate verbally.
Yeah,
well.
Maybe it's what aspect of it that you're drawn to. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thing. I just think people are complicated. So
I like what you said, Kristen, that we feel deeply. All right. Well, I think we should probably wrap up this episode and then we can hang out after and talk some more. But thank you so much for joining us. We will definitely put your information in the show notes for anyone who wants to work with you and can relate to exactly what you're coaching on, which I think there's a lot of people in that boat. So I appreciate your insights.
I appreciate yours. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I really actually think it's important to be talking about all this stuff. And you never know who's listening. You even helped one person through a podcast. I was that one person. I know they've helped more than me, but it made all the difference. So
yeah, totally true. Me too.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, Kristen.
Thanks.
You.
Bye. All right. Thanks, everybody. And we'll see you next time. If you want a successful career making feature films and a happy family at the same time, visit invisiblemansion.com/film and family. And you can apply for our next enrollment window in the Film and Family Academy, which closes July 1st, 2021. We only accept a select group of qualifying filmmakers each quarter.
If you qualify, you will receive private mentorship in addition to lifetime access to our library of courses. And our alumni are already realizing major career milestones and seeing dramatic transformations in their personal relationships. So if you don't want these results, don't apply.
If you do, visit invisiblemansion.com/film and family and click apply before July 1st of this year. Thanks so much.
Bye.
See you next time.